most merciful appearance. Shri Nityananda Prabhu will be speaking from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila Chapter 5, The Glories of Nityananda Balaram. And we hope to try and enter deeply into the mysteries of Lord Nityananda Prabhu's appearance and his mercy upon Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. We will chant text 1. Vande Nantad Bhutaishvayam. Sri Nityanandam Ishvaram. Yasechchaya Tatsvarupam. Agenapi Narupyate. Translation. Let me offer my obeisances to Lord Sri Nityananda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose opulence is wonderful and unlimited. By his will, even a fool can understand his identity. Om Agnana Timirtha. By his will, even a fool can understand his identity. The personalistic Siddhanta of the highest truth in spiritual life always involves the mercy, the blessings, and the favor of a personality. By his will, even a fool can understand his identity. Understanding depends on a person's blessings. In material existence, we'll do anything to avoid this conclusion. Understanding depends on my intellectual prowess. Understanding depends on my experience. But why should all phases, all levels of understanding, genuine truth, depend on a person and how that person feels about me? In material life, we think money, power, aristocracy, mundane education, that will forge my way forward, and I can understand anything. Then when we become frustrated with material existence and we become attracted to jnana, we think, by my prowess in understanding metaphysical science, just like the Mayavadi sannyasis in Varanasi who made fun of Lord Chaitanya at first. What is this chanting and dancing? What does it have to do with genuine spiritual development? You should be spending your time studying Vedanta. Why are you chanting and dancing in the company of fanatics? So they are advancing this point. Understanding depends on you and your own abilities. Varoha Panta, ascending process. You rise up through austerities, through study of what is Brahman, what is illusion, what is not illusion. Then you become as good as, you become God. Actually, you are God, but you've forgotten. By the ascending process, you remember that you're God. So even at the last snare of Maya, in which one, frustrated at trying to enjoy material life, thinks the solution is to realize I'm God, everything depends on your own prowess. In comparison, the Vaishnava position seems radically different, and indeed it is. We're always after the mercy of a person. Parampara means the mercy of one person transferred to another person, down to us. It's like Srila Prabhupada once explained, what happens when you offer food? You offer your food to your spiritual master, he offers it to his spiritual master, to his, it goes on up the parampara, the offering of food, to Krishna, and then Krishna eats. And then Krishna passes the remnants down through parampara, down to you. This is the science of prasad. Always there's a person involved. The spiritual master is described as the rain cloud of mercy, who takes water from the ocean of Krishna. The guru has no mercy of his own. Like the cloud is formed by evaporating water from the ocean. And then the cloud, that rain cloud, pours the water upon dry land. And all the plants, the vegetation that is suffering in a drought begins to prosper. Similarly, the living entities suffering, imagining that they're separate from Krishna, they begin to prosper. Everything depends on a person and what a person does. Therefore, the spiritual science is all about getting the superior blessings of the superior person. This is why the problem of envy is highlighted so much in bhakti, because envy destroys our ability to get the blessings of a person. Later in this chapter, we'll see a problem that arises even in a very apparently devotional setting because of the refusal to acknowledge a person's devotional glories and stature. That person is Nityananda Prabhu. However, the one who was apparently offended was a devotee of Nityananda Prabhu. That is a mystery. How it is that the devotee feels that because I was not acknowledged, the offense is not actually for me. It is for Nityananda Prabhu, my master. It's a very deep situation. But for now, let us continue to meditate upon how, in genuine spiritual understanding, the mercy of a person is always involved. The will of the person. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya, I'm not manifest to everyone. I don't reveal myself. Any gentleman or lady will not just expose his or her identity to someone without that person having qualification. So why should the Supreme Personality of Godhead do that? The Lord is Purushottam, the best of persons. Therefore, he knows best how to handle himself, how to present himself, or how not to present himself. Even in material existence, someone is glorified with having tact by their showing. I know when to speak about myself, when to reveal in confidence, and when not to. Shouldn't we see that same tact supremely manifest in the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So Krishna explains that I don't just expose myself to everyone. I have an energy that assists me in filtering who is qualified to know me and who is not qualified. Yogamaya Samavrita. Without the will of the Lord, we cannot penetrate the curtain of Maya. As Srila Prabhupada wrote in his famous prayers, Markine Bhagavad Dharma, upon arriving in the USA, Krishna, by your will, they've entered into Maya. By your will, they can come out of Maya. He focused on that principle of the will. the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in its most merciful form, appears as Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. We cannot distinguish between the two in terms of emphasizing one and de-emphasizing the other. We'll hear more about that later. But for now, again, let us focus on the crux of bhakti, which means the favor, the will, the mercy of a person is always involved. How do we feel about that? Is there some way around it, the impersonalist streak in us? Wonders. Why do I always have to depend on the mercy of someone else? Isn't there some way I can rise up exclusively by my own powers? We know the definition of an impersonalist. You need to cross over a narrow ditch. So the impersonalist takes help of your hand to cross the narrow ditch, to step over it. And then as soon as he gets to the other side, pushes you away. Whereas in bhakti, we're always eager to recognize the mercy of others. So many Vaishnav songs speak of, Gurudev, your mercy is all I'm made of. Or Krishna se tomara, Krishna dite pada. Krishna, you are the property of the devotee. Therefore, I'm running after the devotee, shouting, Krishna, Krishna. Nirvishesha shunyavadi paschata desha tarine. The world afflicted by impersonalism and voidism means I don't need anyone's mercy. Maybe a little help in the beginning to get myself going until my full powers develop and manifest. That is impersonalism, voidism. Again and again, you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita about the dependency on the mercy of others, on the mercy of superiors. The crucial factor is pointed out by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami right in the very beginning. By his will, even a fool can understand his identity. That understanding does not depend on our mundane prowess. It's by the will of Nityananda Prabhu. And that will is so decisive and crucial that even a fool can understand his identity if Nityananda Prabhu desires. Otherwise, you can be the most materially erudite person. And if you don't have that will, that willful mercy shown by Nityananda Prabhu, what can you understand? And we'll see that later in this chapter as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami presents an autobiographical account. The origins of Nityananda Prabhu are in the topmost quarter of the spiritual world. Krishna and Balaram, what is the difference between the two? Balaram is whitish, Krishna is color of a dark blue rain cloud. Balaram generally wears blue cloth, Krishna wears yellow cloth. They are so close. Balaram is Krishna's first expansion. He serves Krishna in so many ways. Four ways he serves Krishna deal with the creation. As Mahasankarshan and as the three Purusha avatars. The fifth way he renders service to the Lord as Sheshanag, Ananta Shesh, manifesting as so many articles in the Lord's pastimes, slippers, cushions, bedsteads, so forth. The whole spiritual world is sustained by Balaram. that same Balaram, known as the servitor Godhead, appears as Sri Nityananda Prabhu. In the way that Balaram serves Krishna, Nityananda Prabhu serves Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Balaram serves Krishna in those four ways dealing with the creation, and in the way of personal assistance. Similarly, Nityananda Prabhu serves Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by giving his association. Just think, giving of association is also service. So Nityananda Prabhu, the Shastra describes, serves Lord Chaitanya simply by association. If you want to go deeply into how that association manifests, that association happens in three ways, in the same ways that association of Balaram and Krishna manifests. Those three ways are as guru, as friend, as servant. This is how Balaram relates to Krishna, and this is how Nityananda Prabhu relates to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the most confidential part of the spiritual world, the highest part of the spiritual world, this is where we can trace Nityananda Prabhu as Balaram, the first personal expansion of Krishna. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wants to give us some very deep insight into how he became empowered, how Chaitanya Charitamrita came about. The blessings of Nityananda Prabhu resulted in Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami getting the mercy of the Vaishnavas. So one mercy of a person leads to other mercy of a person or persons, and other mercy of persons and persons. And this way, bhakti goes on. Just chain reactions of personal mercy are set off. How different is that from our impersonal conceptions and contaminations? Nirvishesha shunyavadi paschachadesha tarini. Somehow or other. Okay, a little mercy from a person's required at some point. But I've got abilities, I've got prowess. At some point, that will manifest. Hopefully, at some point, my own personal stature, my own personal tejas will be the crucial factor. Maybe not in the beginning, but at some point, it will happen. That's what the impersonalist contamination lurking in the corner of our heart dictates. You may have to be very humbly dependent on another's mercy now, but sooner or later, your own stature, your own potency, your own tejas will be recognized as decisive. Yet the Shastra tells us completely different. The more we make spiritual advancement, the more we understand we are dependent on the mercy of the Vaishnavas, on the mercy of the Lord. This is not weakness, this is strength. Through that dependency on the mercy of superior personalities, spiritual strength, bala, descends. Material strength, how far can that get you? Mm-hmm. It's relative. It's saturated by time. Mm-hmm. Whereas the spiritual strength, it has no limitation by the arrangement of the Lord. Therefore, the first verse says, unlimited opulences manifesting in the will that even a fool can understand Nityananda Prabhu's identity. In the beginning of this chapter, it is also described that Nityananda's mercy is like an ocean, and that ocean has no limitation. It's unlimited. Although the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu has no limitation, Kaviraj Goswami says, by the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, he can touch one drop of that ocean. So even to experience just a drop of Nityananda Prabhu's unlimited opulence, which most powerfully manifests as mercy, that also requires the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. Just to touch one drop. This is what we are dealing with, far beyond our conceptions, far beyond our tiny analyses, far beyond our tiny comprehension. Just to touch one drop of the ocean of Nityananda Prabhu, we need his mercy. What to speak of comprehending more? By reading this chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, we begin to have a glimpse into how tiny and insignificant we are, and how vast is the ocean of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wants to relay to us how even in what seemed to be pukka or authorized Vaishnava circumstances, problems can develop. That is the nature of this world. Krishna himself doesn't cover up this reality. What does he say in the beginning of the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Sakkalinaha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. Bhagavad Gita, the real meaning, in the course of time, it became lost. So Krishna came to re-clarify the purport of Bhagavad Gita. These things happen in material existence. Krishna doesn't cover up this reality. He doesn't present to you material existence as a rose garden. Even the meaning of Bhagavad Gita becomes lost. What to speak of everything else? In the case of the purport of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna himself comes to revive the clear meaning. In this situation that Kaviraj Goswami is going to relay to us, a situation in which there's kirtan going on all the time, there's worship of the deity going on all the time, there's sankirtan festivals going on regularly at the home of Kaviraj Goswami. Yet, amongst Vaishnava activities and Vaishnava dealings, a problem manifests. Before introducing the situation, Kaviraj Goswami wants us to understand, I shouldn't speak about this event, because the event involves Kaviraj Goswami getting inconceivable mercy from Nityananda Prabhu. So ordinarily, this should be confidential, like portions of the Vedas. People should not take this cheaply, and it involves that will of Nityananda Prabhu, that personal will, manifest in such an astonishing way. So, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami acknowledges the need for discretion. Just like when you're speaking about someone very dear to you and you're not sure of the audience, you don't discuss the confidential, personal ways and activities and characteristics of that dear friend of yours. You want to make sure that the audience has the ability to resonate properly, to understand with what you might say. So you judge very carefully. No, I will not speak about the personal ways and means, the personal methodology of my dear friend. Also, Kaveri Goswami obviously didn't want to put himself forward as great. But at the same time, he thought, what we need to highlight here in this situation is the greatness of Nityananda Prabhu's mercy. Only because of that greatness will I speak about the incident, which ordinarily should not be disclosed. I'll do it to advertise the unlimited personal mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. By understanding something of Nityananda Prabhu, we can understand the desires of Lord Chaitanya, because Nityananda Prabhu fulfills all of Lord Chaitanya's desires. This scene, which resulted in Kaviraj Goswami getting the mercy of Nityananda, began in an innocent way. Ecstatic kirtans, worshiping the deity, and the entrance of a foremost devotee. The servant of Nityananda Prabhu, Sri Miniketana Ramdas, is described as Prema Dham, the reservoir of Krishna Prema, personification of Krishna Prema. He has entered the scene. His absorption in pure bhakti was so astonishing. He was shivering in ecstasy, part of his body. The other part of his body was stunned. Tears were shooting from his eyes. Anyone who looked upon Miniketana Ramdas, they would also start crying. That's how dramatic his personality, his personage was in terms of connection to Nityananda Prabhu and immersion in pure love. When he entered the scene, kirtan, deity worship going on, everyone paid their obeisances. Miniketana Ramdas would have the habit, the lost in pure love of Krishna. He would, as someone offered obeisances, he would climb on top of them. Or he would slap them. Or he would strike them with his flute. He was totally lost in the madness of pure love of God. From time to time, the shout of Nityananda's name would pierce the air. Everyone was astonished. The potency of the holy name manifesting in such an astonishing way left no doubt that Miniketana Ramdas was a personal representative of Nityananda Prabhu. There was no one had any other thought in mind. He carried the presence of Nityananda Prabhu as the Prema Dham, as the reservoir of Prema. Yet, in these circumstances, a problem developed. Much as we would not like these things to happen in such Vaishnava situations, that is the nature of things in this world. Sometimes, even in our Krishna-conscious society, there are problems. Srila Prabhupada compared ISKCON to a hospital. In a hospital, there are germs because the hospital is open for sick people. So naturally, some germs will manifest because of the nature of the hospital's work, to take in sick people and to cure them. So even though it's the nature in a hospital for germs to appear, the expert physicians counteract constantly by keeping the place purified. So you have two things going on at once. Germs naturally appear, and the expert physicians are always counteracting, sterilizing, sterilizing, sterilizing. This is the way it is. In this way, we are not utopians. We don't think, now we have come to bhakti, there will be, everything will be flawless, there'll be no problems. No, this is the material world. And as I said, Krishna himself acknowledges the problems of material existence. Sakalina hamata yoga nashta prantapa. Even Bhagavad Gita, its meaning, its true meaning becomes lost. Krishna speaks it again. Similarly, the expert physicians sterilize the hospital again. This is service. Here we are at the home of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And there is a brahmana who's serving the deity, as Mini Ketana Ram Das has entered, just turning the scene upside down because of his Krishna praying, his shouting of Nityananda's name. But the brahmana, Gunanava Misra, he continues to worship the deity without acknowledging the entrance of Mini Ketana Ram Das in the slightest. And this brahmana is described as being very respectable. So you see that in spiritual life, we have to be careful. Personalism requires thoughtfulness, humility, discretion, sensitivity. These are all parts of our relating to other devotees, relating to Krishna. If we are insensitive and brusque, rough and callous in our dealings with devotees, it shows something about our dealings with the Supreme Lord. That's another aspect of this event. The conclusion is there is a problem with the understanding of Nityananda Prabhu. But you'll say, wait a minute, we're just dealing with Gunanava Misra. He's a pujari, very respectful brahmana. He's offering puja. Okay, Mini Ketana Ram Das has entered. Everyone's offering obeisances. It's optional whether Gunanava Misra should, you know, stop his puja or not. I mean, we don't want to get too much into these rituals. Why is such a big deal about this? Naturally, our mind would think like that. How can it be an offense? He's worshiping the deity. Mini Ketana Ram Das had sat down, and the brahmana still did not offer respect. Mini Ketana Ram Das became angry. What do you mean, angry? What kind of sadhu is this? He's so concerned with his own honor? Just because a pujari who's serving the deity doesn't offer him obeisances, he becomes angry? What is this? What was Mini Ketana Ram Das's conclusion? Here I find the second Romaharshana Sutta. I can see this happening in a drama. Here I find the second Romaharshana Sutta, who did not stand to show honor when he saw Lord Balaram. I said, wait a minute. Balaram is one thing. Mini Ketana Ram Das is another thing. I mean, is this some kind of pride? It's not that Balaram has appeared. It's Mini Ketana Ram Das. And yet he's, here I find the second Romaharshana Sutta, who did not stand for Balaram. When Balaram entered, he did not stand up. And he became angry. Is this false ego, or what is it? We have to think deeply. After making that pronouncement in anger, Miniketan Ramdas continued his dancing in ecstasy, singing in pure love of God. Meanwhile, the Brahmana who was on the altar doing the puja, you probably would compliment him. He did not become angry. He kept his composure. This is a real sadhu. First of all, he's doing puja. He did not disrupt his puja to the deities. And secondly, when Miniketan Ramdas became angry, the Brahmana was not agitated in the slightest. Even though Miniketan Ramdas had pierced the air with that shout, "Here we find the second Romaharshana Sutta." Everyone knew who Romaharshana Sutta was. They read Bhagavatam. So just think, if you're looking at this situation through the eyes, through neophyte eyes, if we try to look at this situation without the mercy of the parampara, we would get bewildered. We would have difficulty understanding who is the proper sadhu here, who is setting the real standard. The festival ended, and Miniketan Ramdas departed. On his way out, he offered his blessings to everyone. But also on his way out, he had a, shall we say, spiritual altercation, or he had some conflict with the brother of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. They had some dispute. Of course, we would think, oh, why do there have to be disputes amongst Vaishnavas? True, there shouldn't be disputes, but Vaishnavism involves sensitivity. So Miniketan Ramdas's behavior was all about sensitivity, the lack of sensitivity being shown, not to Miniketan Ramdas, but to Nityananda Prabhu. Miniketan Ramdas could detect that Pujari, it's not by chance that he, or ritualistic purity, that he didn't offer obeisances. Miniketan Ramdas could detect he's got a problem with Nittai. He's got a problem with Nityananda. And I am the servant of Nityananda. So by his disrespecting me, he's actually disrespecting Nityananda, because it is Nityananda whom he actually has the problem with. Therefore, he does not take Nityananda Prabhu's devotees seriously. With his transcendental vision, Miniketan Ramdas could see that. He's no ordinary person. He's Prema Dham, the reservoir of Prema. So the reaction of Miniketan Ramdas was out of service. I cannot tolerate my master being disrespected. I know what's going on here. In other words, there is some misconception about Nityananda Prabhu. There's some minimization of Nityananda Prabhu. And it is my service to Nityananda Prabhu to not allow any of that, especially in a Vaishnava gathering. So that is why Miniketan Ramdas protested. Here we have the second Romaharshana Sutta. Narottam Das Thakur in Prema Bhakti Chandrika, when describing how we can use our emotions perfectly in bhakti, says you use anger for when the Lord or the Lord's devotee is minimized. So that's what Miniketan Ramdas was doing. He could see. It's not that he's ignoring me. It's not that Gunanava Misra is putting me down or neglecting me. He has a problem with Nityananda. Therefore, I'll speak up. Therefore, I will protest this. These are the subtleties of Vaishnavism. Vaishnavism is supreme personalism, because the supreme personality of Godhead is involved. And more confidential than dealings in which the Supreme Personality of God is involved, are dealings in which the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are involved. So many Caitanya Ramdas is indicating all this. You can't separate me from Nityananda Prabhu. You've got a problem with Nityananda Prabhu, therefore you show a problem to me. You show you have a problem with me. And if you have a problem with me, it means you have a problem with Nityananda Prabhu. He could see the holistic package. So he was not acting out of false ego. He was standing up for the honor of Nityananda Prabhu. So on his way out, the problem worsened. There was a dispute between Mini Caitanya Ramdas and the brother of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, no ordinary jiva. Often he is said to be Kasturika Gopi in Braj Leela. Yet his brother, in this worldly situation, made a big mistake. What is that mistake? Kaviraj Goswami describes, my brother had firm faith in Lord Chaitanya, but not even the slightest faith, at best, in Nityananda Prabhu. The brother had made a distinction. Lord Gauranga, he is glorious, unlimitedly. Nityananda Prabhu, very perplexing person. This distinction was at the heart of this very intriguing event, because you've got all this bhakti going on. Personalities who are shivering with love of Krishna, tears pouring from their eyes. At the same time, you're having some offenses going on. It's a very deep situation, which requires a lot of spiritual contemplation. Kaviraj Goswami reveals that then the unhappiness in Mini Caitanya Ramdas' mind was because he detected problems with Nityananda, lack of faith in Nityananda, minimization of Nityananda, even by those who claim to be Gaur Bhaktas, devotees of Lord Chaitanya. But therefore, he had this unhappiness in his mind, and he expressed his anger. Kaviraj Goswami tried to intervene and explain to his brother what is the Siddhanta. He said, these two brothers are like one body. They are identical manifestations. If you do not believe in Lord Nityananda, you will fall down. If you have faith in one but disrespect the other, your logic is the logic of accepting half a hen. Then he says an amazing thing to his brother. It would be better that you just disregard both brothers than to have faith in one and not the other. Better just forget the whole package. Your focus upon Mahaprabhu while neglecting Nityananda is so unauthorized, it's so calamitous, it's best you also forget Chaitanya Mahaprabhu too. That'll be a safer position. This makes us really think, what is going on here? We thought that bhakti was liberal and just allowing everything as long as you feel devotion in your heart. No, real love is so precise, so sensitive. The impersonalist streak in us causes us to not think of that reality. The more you advance in pure love, the more expert you are at sensitivity, dealing with personalities. So therefore, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami tells his brother, you're acting so improperly, you're making such a mess while apparently being on the spiritual platform. It's better you also forget about Lord Chaitanya. Neglect him as well as Nityananda, rather than try to go for one and avoid the other. Mini Caitanya and Ram Dass was around for that dispute between Kaviraj Goswami and his brother. He heard this discussion, and he saw the brother's reaction. The brother was obviously not accepting. So Mini Caitanya and Ram Dass finished off the scene by breaking his flute and going away. That signified there would be an unfortunate reaction the brother had to experience. And indeed, he fell down from his spiritual practices. This shows, again, we have to be very careful in our dealings. Even in what seems to be innocent and hearty devotional situation, kirtan's going on, festival, arti, worship of the deity, yet someone has obliterated their spiritual life, destroyed their spiritual life by not being responsible. On the one hand, we've seen Nityananda Prabhu dealing with Jagai and Madai. But you see, Gunanava Mishra and Kaviraj Goswami's brother, they should have known better. That's the point. When you have mercy, in that you have some Vaishnava understanding, and you also have an opportunity to deepen that understanding, because it's the brother of Kaviraj Goswami. Obviously, there was some neglect in their spiritual practice. Obviously, there was some neglect in their spiritual advancement. And therefore, this inauspiciousness resulted, so much so that Kaviraj Goswami's brother fell down. So yes, we are dealing with an unlimited ocean of mercy, but we are also dealing with some big responsibilities. How does Kaviraj Goswami summarize this scene? Upon the departure of Mini Caitanya Ram Dass and his breaking the flute, storming out in anger, he says, "I have thus described the power of the servants of Lord Nityananda." Kaviraj Goswami does not take our vision away from the power of Nityananda Prabhu's servants. That is the important point. Mini Caitanya Ram Dass, as the powerful servant of Nityananda Prabhu, had appeared in the assembly. If that was not acknowledged, there are going to be big spiritual problems, because all the members of that assembly should have known better. A very respectable brahmana serving the deity, the brother of Kaviraj Goswami who accepted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yet there was some materialism present, some insensitivity, some offense. And there had to be some reaction. We should not be afraid of the burden of love. Love requires a desire for increased sensitivity, for increased expertise in reciprocation. That is the unlimited ocean of bhakti. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Srinivasacharya says, they're always working to expand the ocean of Ananda. So bhakti is no stagnant or stable thing. It's dynamic. It's always increasing. That's not a problem for us. That's a wonder for us. And certainly the means for our increasing our bhakti abilities, our bhakti sensitivity, that's given to us as the mercy of Lord Nityananda. But if we willfully disregard that mercy and we try to proceed in spiritual life, there'll be problems. And this is what Kaviraj Goswami is pointing out. Now he wants to go to the other side. He wants to glorify the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu on himself, and he feels totally unqualified and unworthy. So we have seen the disregard of the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, and now we are going to see Kaviraj Goswami just totally recognizing the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. So we go from one to the other. Therefore, he says, I shall describe another characteristic of his mercy. He went to sleep at night, and Nityananda Prabhu appeared to him in a dream. Because Nityananda Prabhu was pleased, you have defended me. You have defended my position. You chastised your own brother and tried to present the absolute truth to your brother, who was masquerading as a full-fledged Vaishnav, even presenting himself as a devotee of Mahaprabhu, but who had totally neglected me, Nityananda Prabhu. Kaviraj Goswami had done service. He had stood up for the honor, the integrity, the position of Nityananda Prabhu. And so Nityananda Prabhu is now reciprocating. He had personal darshan of Nityananda Prabhu. Falling at his feet, he offered his obeisances. Nityananda Prabhu told him, get up, get up, get up. Go to Vrindavan. There you will find the perfection of all things. The beautiful description of Nityananda Prabhu is given. A majestic cowherd boy, vibrating the sound Krishna, Krishna, with his associate devotees gathered around his feet. He motioned Kaviraj Goswami with his hand, off to Vrindavan. When Kaviraj Goswami awoke from the dream, without a moment's delay, he took off for Vrindavan. This shows you decisiveness in following the transcendental order. He was overwhelmed with transcendental ecstasy, but he did not allow that ecstasy to deter his opportunity for service. Nityananda Prabhu has beckoned me with his words and his arm gesturing, off to Vrindavan. Do not be afraid. Immediately go to Vrindavan. You'll find the perfection of all things. So Kaviraj Goswami immediately did that upon awakening. Just see that eagerness. He did not calculate material considerations. He had firm faith in Nityananda Prabhu. He says, off, away I go, off. By the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, Kaviraj Goswami arrived in Vrindavan. But most importantly is what happened when he attained Vrindavan. He got the mercy, as he describes it, of Rupa Goswami, who taught him the science of bhakti rasa, the taste of bhakti. He met Sanatan Goswami, who taught him bhakti siddhanta, all the conclusions, the shastra conclusions of bhakti. He met up with Raghunath Das Goswami. He met up with Jiva Goswami. Kaviraj Goswami attributes all this association to the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. And when Nityananda Prabhu said, off to Vrindavan, there you'll find the perfection of all good things. Kaviraj Goswami says, he meant I was getting the association of the Goswamis in Vrindavan. By the mercy of Lord Nityananda, Kaviraj Goswami got the mercy of the Goswamis in Vrindavan, and by getting the mercy of the Goswamis in Vrindavan, it is possible to understand Radha and Krishna. So now you can see the chain reaction of mercy. The mercy of one person leads to the mercy of other persons, to the mercy of other persons, and ultimately you get the mercy of Radha and Krishna. Kaviraj Goswami concludes this account by saying, ordinarily, I shouldn't talk about these things, but it's the mercy of Nityananda that's moving me. It's forcing me to do this. This is the platform of life we aspire for. To be moved this way and that way by Lord Nityananda's mercy. There was not the slightest tinge of false ego in Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's depiction of this incident, of Lord Nityananda appearing to him in a dream. He's simply telling us to glorify Nityananda Prabhu's mercy. And he begs, I beg Nityananda Prabhu, I don't make any offense in describing his mercy. In this way, once again, we can see the sensitivity in bhakti, the care, the precision. Love is the most scientifically precise reality. It is not just some rajogun feeling, some hormone-driven feeling. In material existence, what people call love is driven by the modes of material nature. We were speaking at educational institution yesterday, Samaya. Yes, we were explaining to the students how when a young man reaches puberty, when he's 15 or 16, the hormone called testosterone increases tenfold. Tenfold. And when he becomes 21, he's at the peak of his blazing fire, male hormone potency. And so, because of that testosterone, that chemical hormone in the body, so much love talk and love desires go on. So much is based on ego, so much is based on insensitivity, selfishness. But when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find out that love is the most exquisite, flawless, spotless thing. With so much sensitivity, so much consideration, so much selflessness. So even though Kaviraj Goswami is speaking about mercy that he's gotten, he does it in such a flawless, egoless way that we can benefit. And we, through his presentation, we can get a drop of the mercy of Lord Nityananda. What we should take from this section of Chaitanya Charitamrita is the need to be more precise and effective in our development of love of Krishna. We can rely on the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu for that. And obviously, we should never minimize Lord Nityananda in relation to Lord Chaitanya. Better to forget both of them than to do that. This is very serious, ecstatic business. Everything is so consequential. This is high stakes. Pure love is high stakes. It's not something just whimsical. Like people tell each other in mundane existence, I want to love you. Do you love me? Again, the testosterone, the chemicals. Now scientists are concluding that actually what people call love is totally a chemical affair. when they so-called fall in love, there's a chemical in the brain called dopamine that's released, which gives them a feeling of euphoria. So in this way, everything can be understood to be chemicals. Even religion is just chemically induced. How will such persons ever understand the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, which bestows pure love so far beyond the mundane conception? But remember, by the will of Nityananda Prabhu, you can understand his identity, you can understand what he's doing. So today we want to especially cry out for that mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. Let us understand your identity. We are fools, we admit. But by your will, we can understand you if you so desire. Let us just touch a drop of the ocean of your mercy. Because your ocean of mercy is unlimited. And please remember, for those who aspire to be genuine disciples, the speed, with the lack of hesitation by which Kaviraj Goswami took the order of Nityananda Prabhu. Without the slightest hesitation, he left for Vrindavan. And there, he got the best. Not simply Vrindavan. You cannot think of Vrindavan separate from devotees. He attained Vrindavan, meaning he attained the mercy of Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Jiva Goswami, and thereby he was able to understand Radha and Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. One question I had was about Lord Nityananda's very compassionate nature. We have heard many times how Lord Nityananda is very compassionate. And if we want to please him and get his mercy, we should also preach the Lord's message. Regarding this, I had regarding this particular aspect of Lord Nityananda's compassion, I had one question that when we go out to preach, we many times come across atheistic, envious people who blaspheme Krishna and the Vedic scriptures also. And especially in Mumbai, now a lot of propaganda by these people. So when we meet them, instead of feeling compassion for them, or instead of feeling that they should also become devotees, we feel anger and, you know, hatred also. So how do we transform this negative emotion to compassion and genuinely wanting them to also get Krishna consciousness?
Preaching means Madhyamadikari, second-class platform, and that means we do have to discriminate. And as Narottam Das Thakur advises, there's nothing wrong. In fact, it is proper use of anger to be angry. That anger has to have a constructive manifestation. Seeing how people are suffering unnecessarily, and seeing how they're being misled, puts an anger in us that causes us to want to do something more about the situation by becoming more pure, by endeavoring with more determination. That is a proper use of Vaishnava anger. When you see how people's opportunities for attaining the ultimate goal of human life, human form of life, are being squandered, how people are being blinded. Yes, one can be angry in that way. But the anger has to have a constructive use for Krishna's service. That's the point of Narottam Das Thakur. It's not that you just go around venting, I'm angry, I'm angry. How does Krishna's service increase? Just like lust, when properly used in bhakti, increases Krishna's service. Krishna must be satisfied. I saw such a lusty situation yesterday at Samaya, the educational institution. The devotees I was with, they were so lusty for using everything for Krishna's pleasure. The whole situation was just saturated with lust. They gave me a tour of the base. This is for Krishna. That is for Krishna. We're doing this for Krishna. This is happening for Krishna. These devotees are doing that for Krishna. I was hit by a wave of lust. So that is what Narottam Das Thakur is talking about. The devotees, they crave to please Krishna's senses. So the anger that a Vaishnava feels when Krishna or his devotee is being minimized, that increases Krishna's service. It's not just kind of some materialistic display of anger. Everything has to be judged by how Krishna's service is enhanced. Mini Caitanya Ram Das's anger illustrated an essential Vaishnav principle. You can't praise Lord Chaitanya and neglect Lord Nityananda. His anger, breaking his flute. This all was for enhancing Krishna's glories. Otherwise, you take it in the wrong way. What kind of sadhu is this? And sometimes people do take it in the wrong way. I know one example I experienced in Japan. Srila Prabhupada, he went to Japan in the early 70s, and he was invited by a local Hindu group to speak. And when devotees got there with Prabhupada, they were put on a stage with a Mayavadi. And the Mayavadi was speaking first and going on and on. In such a way that would be unbearable to a pure lover of Krishna. Denying Krishna's identity. Denying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And asserting some imaginary superior truth of impersonal Brahman. So, again, if you don't understand pure love, you could mistake Srila Prabhupada's reaction. He couldn't tolerate hearing this. His pure love couldn't allow him just to sit there. Impossible. So what could he do? Pure love makes you think, I must protect the glory of my beloved. Pure love doesn't mean let him speak what he likes, let him minimize Krishna. That's just the way it is. So Prabhupada, he immediately came up with a strategy. While the man was speaking, while the Mayavadi was speaking, Prabhupada told the devotees, just start kirtan. So the devotees, of course, you know, young enthusiastic devotees, they saw Prabhupada's discomfort at hearing all these minimizations of Krishna. And devotees, of course, are always eager for kirtan. So there's a Mayavadi very... And all of a sudden, all these Western devotees just jump up. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So what do you think that the Hindus in the audience, you can imagine the reaction. Oh, is this, these are sadhus? What kind of behavior is this? One sadhu is speaking. Why interrupt him? There are so many different ways, so many different truths, so many different gods. What is the problem? What Prabhupada had a problem with it. So the devotees, from the material point of view, disrupted the whole program. Jumping on the stage, cartels. And they were, particularly they were having a good time because Prabhupada had told them to do that, so drive Prabhupada. So the devotees are jumping on stage, having a good time. They've totally disrupted the Swami's speech. And the audience is like, what is this? So why do I bring that up? Because 30 years later, when I visited Japan, some of the persons in the audience, some of the Hindus in the audience, I met them 30 years later, and they came up to me, can you just explain one thing? Why? This is 30 years later. Why did your Swami do such a thing? 30 years later, 3 decades later, they haven't gotten over it. My conclusion is that pure love is the most intelligent phenomenon. It's like Mini Ketana Ram Das was Prem Dham, the reservoir of Prem. So certainly Srila Prabhupada, he knew what the best thing to do for Krishna's senses was at that moment. The best thing is stop him. So he arranged that the stopping of the man's speech would happen in a way that also increased the bhakti, kirtan. Even though the audience was taking the kirtan to be a disturbance and being disrespectful to the Mayavadi, meanwhile, everyone was hearing the holy name. The devotees were protected from the Mayavadi, and the audience was getting to see the chanting and dancing and hear the holy name. So that is perfect intelligence. Still, there was this lack of appreciation that went on for 30 years. Those persons who said that to me, they weren't being disrespectful. They were just, their minds were still blown. 30 years later. They couldn't compute, you know? It didn't add 1 + 1 = 2. There's your Swami, and there's another Swami, and... What can we do? And I talked to some of the devotees who were present at that time, and they just remember the ecstatic kirtan. So all these realities are going on in the world of bhakti. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Maharaj, you are speaking about the mercy that is required in our Krishna consciousness. Unless and until we don't get the mercy, our spiritual life is not going to be successful, or we'll not be able to advance in devotional life. And this mercy is not going to be getting by our qualification or all our external things which we have. So I just wanted to know that Maharaj, a struggling devotee is always going on checking himself whether I'm getting the mercy or not. Whether the symptoms of mercy is coming in my life or not. So what a devotee, how can a devotee can check himself? He should not be getting anything from outside, but how can a devotee go on checking himself that Lord Nityananda Prabhu is giving mercy to him or not. At the same time, we always are always fearful in our life that in due course of our life, that mercy should not go away from our life at any cost. At the same time, I wanted to know that as and when the years goes by in our devotional life, that mercy should go on increasing day by day by day, so that we can attain the goal before we leave our body in this material world.
We look for service. Service to the Vaishnavas, carrying out the order of the Guru, that's how the mercy descends. Krishna himself and Balaram showed this point. Krishna at the school of Sandipani Muni. He went to the forest and to collect firewood, and there was a big natural disturbance, a storm. And in the morning, the Guru came looking for him, and he gave the blessing to Krishna. Generally, people consider their body their number one concern, but you have sacrificed. You have gone through physical inconvenience for me. I bless you because of this service, this sacrifice, that you'll always remember all the Vedic conclusions. So we're looking for service. Mercy will be there, without a doubt. We are lusty for service. And a devotee knows how to seize service opportunities. Just like a businessman knows how to seize financial opportunities. Oh, look at this investment. Let me grab it quick. Well, similarly, a devotee is always eager for service opportunities. It's this hunger for service, this eagerness for service, that makes the atmosphere spiritually electric. And of course, we have that drive for service expressed in a way that doesn't jostle other devotees. Don't mind me banging you out of the way. I'm going for the service. Don't mind that I'm shoving you here. I'm going for service. Part of the going for the service involves sensitivity to devotees, sensitivity to the holy name, sensitivity in all aspects. We're not testosterone driven. We want to be driven by the currents of pure bhakti. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, thank you for your class. Considering this, the point you raised of sensitivity, I always had this one thing in mind that how much important is service to Vaishnavas and being sensitive compared to our own sadhana. Say, for example, a Vaishnava needs something, and it's the best time in the morning for your sadhana, and now you know that to serve him, you'll have to disrupt your sadhana, and maybe at the time of the day, you'll not be able to achieve the same results that you'll get in the morning. And that maybe makes you more disturbed, or say you become insensitive. So how to deal with this situation? How much importance have you to give to serving the Vaishnavas at that time, considering the point of sensitivity?
The intelligence, how to execute service, when to do this and when to do that. Gradually that will come from the Lord in the heart. Mother Yashoda demonstrated the supreme perfection of selectivity in serving Krishna when she was nursing Krishna on her lap in Damodar Leela, and then the milk was boiling over on the stove. That milk Mother Yashoda had especially arranged to get from special cows that would specially flavor the milk, all to make milk sweets so that Krishna would stop breaking into others' houses and stealing milk products. That's why the milk was on the stove boiling. Meanwhile, she had Krishna on her lap. She's nursing him. So she chose, I will put Krishna down and I will tend to the boiling of milk. So that intelligence is a spiritual phenomenon, and gradually you will develop it. We should not kind of torture ourselves that we don't have such high intelligence in the beginning. We should do our best. We should take guidance, on-the-job training, and in this way, gradually, we'll develop those spontaneous skills. Love is a serious, it's the most serious thing. It's the most precise science. And so it takes a while to fully develop in maturity. So we have to have some patience with ourselves. Should I chant Hare Krishna, finish my rounds? Should I do this service for a devotee? You make the best decision that you can based on the guidance that's available around you, and know that you'll make advancement and you'll become even more expert in the future. There has to be some patience with yourself. Krishna has not made bhakti into a sadistic affair. I make bhakti so attractive, and then I just watch how my devotees torture themselves just trying to figure out how to serve me. It's not like that. Just see. Should you chant your rounds or should you serve the devotee? Just see what a labyrinth, what a complexity I've created. All while dangling the sweetness, the madhurya of bhakti in front of them. I make it so difficult and so complex and so torturous to achieve. This is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We do the best we can. That means take advantage of the guidance that's around you, and know that if you do the best you can in the circumstances, you'll become blessed with greater spiritual intelligence in the future. It's like a child. You don't torture a child because the child did this instead of that. You know, the child is trying to follow mother and father. Gradually, the child will mature. What to speak of devotees who are not choosing between mundane things, they're choosing between two Krishna-related things. So ultimately what you're talking about is spontaneous devotion, in which the devotee knows just what the right thing to do at every moment for Krishna's pleasure. First sadhana, vaidhi bhakti, then raganuga. Vaidhi bhakti means rules and regulations. And then naturally, real raga, real attraction will develop. Srila Prabhupada once gave a very concise, eloquent definition of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means you have to do it because I say. So that stage is necessary. So you properly execute vaidhi bhakti, and then the raga will be there. And you can dance like a madman like the devotees this morning in kirtan. Are they following a script? Okay, when the kirtan starts, I will first move my arm like this, and then I will move my leg like that. No, you can see they just go transcendentally mad. That's something that develops naturally. So let us understand that first there is devotional service according to rules and regulations, and then as your spiritual health returns, things start to become spontaneous, and you know what to do the best for Krishna at every moment. Oh, it's time for a play. Time for a drama. It just happens. These things come naturally as we advance in our bhakti. So in the beginning, don't be ashamed to follow Vaidhi Bhakti. It's the source of strength. It's the foundation for advancement. Rules and regulations of devotional service. And certainly there'll come a time when the spontaneity in serving Krishna will become more pronounced. All right?
Judge. You spoke about the burden of love, about the need to be discriminative, sensitive, and humble in personal relationships. Actually, nowadays one is resigned to the fact that as you go ahead in ISKCON, it gets more and more complex. There are more things to be done than what we thought was necessary. So actually, one has grown up in an atmosphere of impersonalism. Apart from the philosophy of impersonalism, relationships have become impersonal within the family, outside, and in Vaishnava relationships also. I mean, it becomes sort of easier to handle things that way. Now we are talking about becoming more personal and using all these discrimination, sensitivity, and other things. Does one expect that these qualities will develop automatically as one follows the sadhana bhakti? Or are there any guidelines that Maharaji could give to develop these qualities?
Part of sadhana bhakti is associating with devotees more advanced than you. That's part of sadhana bhakti. So in the association of advanced devotees, you see more sensitivity, more love, and you become inspired. Yes, I want to be like that also. You become greedy. That's part of the sport of Vaishnava Sangha. You're around a particular devotee. You see the devotee's wonderful qualities. Instead of becoming envious, you pray to Krishna, please give me that quality. That's how to sport in the association of devotees. Look at that devotee. Oh, if only I could be like that. It's contagious. And you're thinking in that way. Meanwhile, someone's looking at you. Look at that devotee. If only I could be like that. This is the transcendental madness of bhakti. We are hearing such an exalted account of by Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami. But in this same chapter, he calls himself more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. Lower than a worm in stool. He's not just saying that to be poetic. If I say such a humble statement, all the Vaishnavas will worship me. No, he's actually feeling that way. This is the mystery of bhakti, that the more you advance, the less advanced you think you are. The more aware you are of the unlimited expanse of the ocean of love of Krishna. So naturally you begin to think, I just have at best a drop. Look at the whole ocean that's there. I'm nothing. So part of sadhana bhakti includes leaving yourself open to stimulation from devotees. And you'll always be enlivened in that way. You see their wonderful qualities, and you beg the Lord, please, one day may that quality be mine. And as I said, meanwhile, someone's looking at you. And, oh, If only I could be like that. Of course, you don't notice. So in this way, bhakti is a viral experience. It's contagious. The whole dynamic is let loose by association of devotees. All these stimulations are around you all the time. It's like when you're in the middle of a big kirtan. You look at this devotee expressing his ecstasy in that way. Another devotee expressing his ecstasy in this way. And it's just everywhere you look. And you're thinking, oh, these devotees are so much more ecstatic than me. And you become inspired. All around you are different varieties of inspiration and ecstasy in glorifying Krishna. That's the spiritual world. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.